Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey there, Herman and Corin. So, among my other interests in life, you probably won't be surprised to know that I spent some time in my youth, sitting on the edge of airports and watching planes land, which is pretty amazing. For those who haven't been plane spotting, it's fun, I think, now and again, better than too frequently. You can even do it here in Israel, which I think would surprise a lot of people with the security, but it is possible to go plane spotting in Ben Gurion, and you get a really interesting assortment of flights if you're if you want to spot some unusual airlines and unusual mix of traffic. It's a good place to go. But in my teenage years, I guess, I would spend summers in West Cork, and you'd hear the sonic boom of the Concorde as it moved across the Atlantic. And at a certain point in time, I picked up a radio scanner. So VHF radio scanner, you can listen to, you know, the pilots talking to air traffic control. And as they move out from the west of Ireland, on their way across the Atlantic, they'd be handed off to the international or the transatlantic control, which was a joint ATC center. I don't know if it still exists. You guys can tell me from your much more up-to-date knowledge, called Prestwick, which was managed between Shannon and Scotland. And the control would, for the transatlantic portion of the flight, be done, move from WHF frequencies, VHF radio, over to HF frequencies. And planes that are able to cross the Atlantic, of course, have the ETOP certification and other physical modifications or requirements for the plane. It always struck me as curious. I mean, I guess you could maybe ask this about the whole concept of air traffic control with all the automation that we spend so much time talking about on this podcast. How can we still require humans, you know, sitting in a facility? Maybe they're assisted by AI tools, I don't know, today. But we still fundamentally rely upon humans speaking instructions over a radio frequency to pilots. That still remains most of the AI, so it's still a rather manual functionality. But specifically, the one I always wondered about was why HF radio remained the kind of norm in transatlantic crossings, because you have satellite technology, and it always seemed like kind of a fairly brittle thing to rely upon, given the need for spacing and things of that nature. But it's a fascinating system. Transatlantic crossings and the different tracks that aircraft are assigned on as they move back and forth. And the volume is pretty staggering as well. If you look at one of those flight tracking apps and you see at any given time how many aircraft and how many people are moving either way between North America and Europe, it's pretty incredible. It's a constant stream of movement. And it's amazing to think that one day just one aircraft doing this would have been, you know, earth-shattering, record-breaking, and now it's hundreds all at once. So my question for you two is, really, I guess we can broaden out to talking about ATC, and it's actually quite timely because of the recent failure we had in Greece that was due to a radio frequency interruption. Don't we have better technology nowadays, like satellite connectivity, perhaps other forms? Why are we still relying upon radio frequencies broadcast out into space? Or is that as good as we have at the moment? Herman and Corin, tell us about ATC, transatlantic crossings, and this fascinating facet of modern aviation.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corin, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother. It is a crisp January morning here, and the winter sun is just starting to hit the Jerusalem stone across the street. It is actually quite peaceful, which is a nice contrast to the chaos of the topic we are diving into today. Herman Poppleberry at your service. It is indeed a beautiful day, Corn, but as you said, we are headed into some pretty technical territory. Our housemate Daniel sent us a fascinating voice note earlier. He was reminiscing about his time in West Cork, sitting near Mizen Head, watching the contrails of the Concorde and other airliners as they headed out over the Atlantic. He mentioned listening to the radio chatter on a shortwave receiver and hearing that characteristic crackle of pilots talking to air traffic control.
It is such a vivid image, right? Sitting on the rugged coast of Ireland, hearing that rhythmic hiss and realizing that those planes are about to leave the world of easy, clear communication behind. Daniel was asking a really pointed question. Why, on this day, January 6th, 2026, are we still relying on humans speaking over scratchy high-frequency radio for transatlantic crossings? With all the automation, the AI reasoning models we have discussed, and of the mark of quite white in his twice, gosh. Why did
It is a brilliant question because it touches on the intersection of physics, international regulation, and the sheer scale of the ocean. Most people assume that when you are on a flight from London to New York, you are always under the watchful eye of a radar screen and a crystal clear radio link. But the reality of oceanic flight is much more, let us call it atmospheric. It is an archaeological site of technology, where layers of the past are still functioning as the foundation for the present.
Right, and as we discussed back in episode 265 when we talked about radio frequency hygiene, the spectrum is a crowded place. But the ocean is a different beast entirely. Herman, let us start with the basics for everyone. When a plane leaves the coast of Ireland or Newfoundland, what actually changes in how they talk to the ground?
So, for the first part of the flight, pilots use very high frequency radio, or VHF. This is what most people think of as standard aviation radio. It is clear, it is reliable, but it has one major limitation. It is line of sight. Because of the curvature of the Earth, a VHF signal only travels about 200 miles if the plane is at 35,000 feet. Once you get further out than that, the signal just shoots off into space. You lose contact with a
And that is where the oceanic gap begins. Traditionally, once you hit that limit, you switch to high-frequency radio, or HF. And this is where things get weird. Instead of a straight line, HF radio waves actually bounce off the sky.
Exactly. It is called sky wave propagation, or skipping. The signal travels up to the ionosphere, which is a layer of the atmosphere ionized by solar radiation. There are actually different layers, the E layer and the F layer. During the day, the D layer is thick and actually absorbs some of the signal, but at night, it disappears, allowing the signal to hit the higher F layer and bounce thousands of miles. It is how a pilot in the middle of the North Atlantic can talk to a control and internally, the core drops so you shouldn't be a radio repair, and then they include physics, falsity, just for it'll do the defense.
It feels like listening to a ghost. I remember you showing me some recordings of this, Herman. It is that characteristic hiss and the rhythmic pulsing of the signal. So, if we have satellites, why is this still the standard? Why are we still asking pilots to report their position every 10 degrees of longitude over a scratchy radio link in 2026?
Well, the short answer is that it is no longer the only standard, but it remains the mandatory backup. We have moved into an era of what we call Controller Pilot Data Link Communications, or CPDLC. In 2026, most modern airliners are basically texting their position to air traffic control. They use satellites for this, and it is much more automated. But here is the catch, Corn. Satellites are nefernict, and they aren't mid-aught
frit. That is an interesting point. We often think of satellite connectivity as this ubiquitous, infinite resource because we have things like Starlink for our homes. I saw a report just yesterday that British Airways and Aer Lingus are rolling out Starlink across their entire fleets this year. But aviation-grade satellite communication is a different level of certification, right?
It really is. To use a satellite for air traffic control, the system has to be incredibly resilient. It has to work during solar storms,
it has to have guaranteed latency, and every airline has to pay for that bandwidth. High-frequency radio, on the other hand, is free once you have the equipment. The air is free, and the International Civil Aviation Organization, or ICAO, requires that planes have a non-satellite backup for long-distance communication.
So it is the ultimate fail-safe. But Daniel mentioned the level of automation we have now. If the plane knows exactly where it is via GPS, and the air traffic control computer knows where it should be, why do we need the human speaking the instructions at all? Can we not just automate the whole texting process via satellite and leave the radio for emergencies only?
We are actually very close to that. We have a system now called IRIS, developed by the European Space Agency and Viasat, which is entering its full commercial phase this year. It allows for what we call 4D trajectory-based operations. Instead of just a flight plan, the plane and the ground are constantly negotiating the exact path through space and time. It is incredibly efficient, but there is a psychological and procedural hurdle. This reminds me,
Think about the North Atlantic tracks. These are the highways in the sky that are rebuilt every single day based on the jet stream.
If I stay in the spines as in Bale is because of a 14 or Sweeney's of Fidel survive. Obey I take us keep playing six space by as a space with bites. To sure he's debated I break either force taiki twilight, so we're other belt, civil life.
I see. So the voice element is about the speed of nuance. A pilot can convey urgency, stress, and complex intentions in 3 seconds of speech that might take 30 seconds to type into a flight management computer. And in aviation, 30 seconds is an eternity.
Spot on. And there is also the party line effect. On a VHF or HF radio frequency, every pilot in the area can hear what everyone else is saying. If I hear a pilot ahead of me reporting severe turbulence at 37,000 feet, I can ask for a lower altitude before I even hit the bumps. With private data links, you lose that shared situational awareness. You are in a vacuum, only talking to the controller.
That is a fascinating second-order effect I had not considered. The radio creates a community of pilots who are all looking out for each other. But let us talk about the fragility Daniel mentioned. He noted that HF radio is brittle. It depends on the ionosphere, which depends on the sun. What happens when the sun decides to be difficult? We are in a period of high solar activity right now, are we not?
We are currently in the declining phase of solar cycle 25, but activity is still incredibly high. Just last November, we had a massive X5.1 solar flare that caused global radio blackouts. When a solar flare hits, it can cause what we call an ionospheric blackout. The layers of the atmosphere that usually reflect the HF signals start to absorb them instead. Suddenly, that skip stops skipping. You can have hundreds of planes at where.
That sounds terrifying. What does a controller do in that situation?
They follow the procedures. Everyone stays on their assigned track at their assigned speed and altitude. The system is designed so that if everyone just does what they were last told, they will not hit each other. But it is nerve-wracking. This is why the push for satellite technology is so strong. We want a system that does not rely on the whims of the sun. But even satellites have their own vulnerabilities. If you are using a satellite in geostationary orbit, it is parked over the equator away.
I remember reading about that. For those polar routes from New York to Hong Kong, they have to rely on different satellite constellations, like Iridium, which are in low Earth orbit and cover the poles. But if those fail, you are back to HF radio. It really is the bedrock of the whole system.
It is. And it is also about international equity. Not every country can afford to mandate multi-million-dollar satellite systems for every aircraft that enters their airspace, but almost every country can maintain an HF radio station. To have a global aviation system, you need a lowest common denominator that everyone can access. HF is that denominator.
It is amazing how much of our modern world relies on these lowest common denominators that feel like relics. It reminds me of episode 278, where we talked about the fragmented state of the global electricity grid. We want high tech, but we are held back by the legacy of what we built 80 years ago.
It is the same principle, but I want to address Daniel's point about the Greece incident. He mentioned a recent failure due to radio frequency interruption. This is becoming a huge issue in 2026. We are seeing a massive surge in intentional and unintentional jamming of GPS and radio frequencies. In the first 4 months of 2025 alone, there were over 123,000 reported incidents of GPS interference in the Baltic and Eastern Mediterranean regions. Even the fightest, last us quit.
So, if an adversary or even a malfunctioning piece of industrial equipment starts blasting noise on the satellite frequencies, the data link goes down. But jamming a high-frequency signal that is bouncing off the ionosphere from 3,000 miles away, that is much harder to do effectively over a large area.
Exactly. There is a certain robustness to analog. It is harder to hack a copper wire and a vacuum tube than it is to spoof a digital signal. But let us look at where this is going. We are seeing the rise of silent oceanic operations. This is the goal where voice radio is only used for the initial check-in and emergencies. Everything else is handled by computers talking to computers. We are seeing systems now where the air traffic control computer can automatically negotiate or fail with like all core carriers.
That sounds like the automation Daniel was asking about. If the computers are doing the talking, does the pilot just become a monitor?
In theory, yes. But in practice, the pilot's role shifts to being a manager of systems. They are making sure the automation is making sensible choices. One of the things we are seeing in recent research is that when you remove the voice chatter, pilots can actually become less engaged. They lose that mental map of where everyone else is because they are not hearing the other planes. So, some developers are working on synthetic voice systems that take the data link messages from other planes and read them aloud in the cockpit to recreate that sense of community.
That is incredible. We are using AI to recreate the problem of the old radio so that humans can stay oriented. It is like how electric cars sometimes pump in engine noise so pedestrians can hear them coming.
It is exactly like that. We are finding that the inefficiencies of the old system actually provided important safety cues that we did not realize we needed until they were gone.
So, to answer Daniel's question, we still have humans speaking over scratchy radios because it is the most reliable, globally accessible, and human-centric backup we have. It fills the gaps that satellites cannot reach, and it provides a level of nuance and community that data links just cannot replicate yet.
Right. And it is also worth noting that the humans are not just sitting there. The controllers at places like Shanwick or Gander are managing an incredibly complex three-dimensional puzzle. Even with automation, the sheer volume of traffic Daniel mentioned, hundreds of planes at once, requires a level of strategic thinking that we are still hesitant to hand over entirely to an algorithm. If two planes need the same altitude to avoid a storm, a algorithm the cave, the keeped. And what I just thought but the alley called saved.
I love that. It is a reminder that even in 2026, the human in the loop is not just a safety feature. It is a sophisticated processing unit that handles the stuff the code cannot.
Absolutely. And for the nerds out there, there is a system called SELCAL, or Selective Calling. This is one of my favorite bits of modernized old tech. Even though the radio is always on, the pilots do not have to listen to the static for 8 hours. Each plane has a unique four-letter code. When the controller wants to talk to a specific plane, they send a tone sequence that sounds like a little melody. If the plane's receiver hears its specific melody, a light kaibait stave paint wait its
family tabs high sick. So it is like a pager for airplanes. That is brilliant. It solves the listening to static problem while still using the old radio technology. It is a 1970s solution to a 1940s problem that is still working in 2026.
Exactly. And companies like Collins Aerospace are still releasing brand new HF radio models, like the HF9500, because the demand is still there. It is not going away anytime soon.
You know, hearing all this makes me realize that the weirdness Daniel noticed is actually a sign of a very mature, very safe system. We do not throw things away just because they are old. We layer new things on top of them until the old thing becomes the foundation.
That is the perfect way to put it. It is an archaeological site of technology. You have the 1940s HF radio at the bottom, the 1970s SELCAL on top of that, the 1990s satellite data links on top of that, and the 2020s space-based radar and IRIS system at the peak.
So what does the future look like? If we are sitting here in 2036, 10 years from now, will Daniel still hear that HF crackle?
I suspect he will. We might see a shift where HF becomes purely a dark backup something that is never used unless everything else fails. There is a technology called HF Data Link, or HFDL, which allows the old radio frequencies to carry digital data. It is slow, like a dial-up modem from the 90s, but it works over thousands of miles without a satellite. We might see the voice part fade away, but the frequencies themselves are too valuable to abandon.
It is the invisible highway, just like we talked about in episode 265. Every piece of the spectrum has a job to do.
It really does. And for the pilots, I think there is a certain comfort in it. When you are over the middle of the Atlantic, and it is 3 a.m, and you are the only soul for hundreds of miles, hearing a human voice from a controller in Ireland or Canada makes the world feel a little less empty.
That is a lovely thought. It is the human connection in the middle of a technical marvel.
So, the next time you are on a flight and you look out at that vast expanse of blue, just remember there is an invisible web of radio waves bouncing off the sky, keeping you in touch with the rest of humanity.
And if you are lucky enough to be sitting on a beach in West Cork like Daniel was, maybe you can still catch a bit of that ghost in the machine.
Just make sure you have a good antenna. The ionosphere can be a fickle mistress, especially during the solar maximum.
I think that is a perfect place to wrap up the technical side of this. But before we go, we should talk about the practical takeaways for our listeners. Because most of us are not pilots, but this system affects us every time we travel.
True. The biggest takeaway is that redundancy is safety. In our daily lives, we often rely on a single point of failure, our phone, our internet connection, a single cloud provider. Aviation is the gold standard of what happens when you refuse to have a single point of failure. They have 3 radios, 2 satellite systems, and a backup plan for the backup plan.
It is a good philosophy for life, really. Have an analog backup for your digital world. Keep a paper map in the car. Write down important phone numbers. Because the ionosphere of our digital lives can go down too.
Definitely. And the second takeaway is about understanding the why behind seemingly obsolete technology. Often, when something looks old or broken in a high-tech field, it is there for a very specific, hard-won reason. It is usually the result of a lesson learned the hard way.
Chesterton's fence applied to radio frequencies. Do not tear down the old radio tower until you understand exactly why it was built in the first place.
Exactly.
Well, this has been a deep dive. I feel like I understand the North Atlantic a lot better now. Daniel, thanks for sending that in. It is always fun to look at the low-tech parts of our high-tech world.
Yeah, it was a great prompt. It really makes you appreciate the layers of engineering that keep us safe.
And to all of you listening, if you have been enjoying my weird prompts and our little deep dives into the obscure corners of the world, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show.
It really does. We love seeing the community grow. And remember, you can find all our past episodes and a way to get in touch with us at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We are also on Spotify, so make sure to follow us there for new episodes every week.
We have some great topics coming up, including a look at the future of deep sea cables and why we still rely on physical wires at the bottom of the ocean. It is a similar theme to today, actually.
Oh, I am excited for that one. The physics of the abyss are even weirder than the physics of the sky.
I bet they are. Well, until next time, I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry.
Thanks for listening to my weird prompts. Keep asking those weird questions.
We will be here to help you find the answers. Goodbye for now.
Bye, everyone.
See you next week.
Wait, Herman. Did you ever actually try to build an HF radio when we were kids?
I did. I tried to use the copper gutters on the house as an antenna.
Oh no. Did it work?
I managed to pick up a broadcast from a station in Moscow, but I also managed to give myself a very small electric shock. Mom was not happy about the gutters.
That explains a lot about you, actually.
Guilty as charged. All right, let us go get some coffee.
Sounds good. Catch you later, everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.